Okay, so let's be honest. Have you ever just felt that pressure? Like when things are getting tough and you have to reach for that that comfort thing.
Oh,
Like
absolutely.
whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's I don't know, disappearing into a TV show or maybe
Scrolling on social media endlessly.
yeah, or stress baking an entire batch of cookies. Like we've all been there.
We've all been there for sure.
But what if those habits, those coping mechanisms that we all rely on, what if those could actually tell us something deeper about our mental health? What if they're like little clues?
It's really interesting to think about it that way. I think we often view those coping mechanisms as just those automatic responses to stress, but they really do. They can offer these insights into our inner world, our needs, and even our patterns that we're not even consciously aware of.
It's like they're speaking a secret language.
A secret
Yeah.
language, exactly.
Yeah. So in this deep dive, we're going to try and decode that secret language. We're going to explore those common coping mechanisms and what they might be saying about you and your inner world. And we'll go beyond just generic advice. We'll give you some tools and some things that you can actually do to make those habits work for you rather than against you.
I think what's really important to remember too is that coping mechanisms aren't inherently good or bad, right? They're more like apps on your phone.
Oh, I like that.
Some are really helpful,
Yeah.
some are distracting,
Right.
and then some, maybe need an update.
Maybe they need to be deleted entirely, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So let's start with like a super classic one, binge watching, like the total urge to just disappear into a fictional world, when reality feels a little too much to handle. Like, have you ever found yourself clicking next episode late into the night, even when you know you should be sleeping?
Oh, all the time, yeah.
What is it about those shows? They suck you in, those stories. What is that?
It's that escape, that delicious escape, isn't it? You
Yeah.
know, we get to step into these worlds where the problems are solved magically within an hour or less,
Yeah.
And the characters are so relatable, and the storylines just provide that temporary break from our own anxieties. But the key word there, I think, is temporary.
Right, because at some point the TV goes off. We have to like come back to reality.
Right.
And what happens then when the screen goes dark and you're just left with yourself and your own thoughts and feelings? Do you think binge watching can be a way to avoid dealing with those uncomfortable things?
It definitely can be. I mean, think about it. What often triggers that binge watching session?
Yeah.
Is it a deadline, a difficult conversation that you're putting off, or just the general, overwhelm of life? And I think binge watching can be an easy way to just kind of numb ourselves out, distract ourselves from those that we just don't want to face.
So how do we break free from that? Sometimes a good show is what you need at the end of the day to just unwind.
Sure.
Where's that line?
Yeah, it's all about finding that balance and intention. And instead of just letting it become this unconscious habit, try setting limits for yourself.
Okay.
Maybe choose one or two nights a week where you really allow yourself to indulge in your favorite shows.
Yeah.
But on the other nights, think about what you're getting from that binge watching. Is it a sense of escape, relaxation, connection with the characters? And see if you can find those same elements in other activities that maybe are a little bit more productive or helpful. So, reading a good book, listening to a podcast, even getting lost in a creative hobby.
Yeah.
Those are all really great ways to unwind and kind of get those same needs met.
I love that. And sometimes even just getting outside, taking a walk, spending time with people you love can be so restorative.
Absolutely.
So it's about finding those activities that actually nourish you,
Right.
not just the ones that numb you out. Here's a little challenge for you for next time. So next time you feel that urge to binge watch, try swapping out one episode for something that helps you connect with yourself or even with the world around you a little bit more. So it could be journaling, meditation, calling a friend, or even just sitting in silence and noticing your breath. Just notice what that does for you.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, now let's talk about another big one. Especially in this digital age, we live in the social media school.
Oh, yeah.
I know you know what I'm talking about. It's that urge to check those feeds, even when you know it's probably going to make you feel worse, more disconnected or like you're not enough.
It's such a paradox, right? We crave that connection.
Yeah.
But then we often end up feeling more isolated and comparing ourselves to everyone else's highlight reels.
Right.
And it's not an accident. Social media is designed to be addictive. It uses all these sophisticated algorithms to keep us scrolling, to keep us engaged.
So, why do we do it? What is it about that scroll, that little notification? Why do we keep coming back for more, even when we know it's not going to make us feel good?
It's dopamine.
Right. Dopamine, that's the end.
That's the neurochemical that makes us feel pleasure and reward.
Okay.
And every time we get a like or a comment or a notification, our brain releases a little bit of it, you know?
Oh, wow.
And that reinforces that scrolling behaviors. Like,
so we're literally getting hooked on those little bursts of validation. No wonder it's so hard to stop.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what's the problem with scrolling? You know, is it really that bad to spend, you know, a few minutes here and there checking our feeds?
Well, think about the opportunity cost.
Right.
Every minute that we're spending scrolling is a minute we're not spending connecting with the people we love.
Right.
Pursuing our passions.
Yeah.
Being present in the real world.
And not to mention, you know, the comparison game. It's so hard to feel good about yourself when you're constantly bombarded with images of other people's seemingly perfect lives. And that can make you feel anxious, insecure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Depressed.
And it's important to remember, what we see on social media is a curated version of reality. It's not the whole picture.
So how do we get out of that vortex? Like, how do we break free? Because let's be real, quitting social media cold turkey.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen for most of us.
It's not realistic.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's not about demonizing social media or trying to eliminate it completely. It's about finding a way to use it more consciously and setting some boundaries for ourselves.
Okay. So how do we do that? What are some actual things that we can do to create those boundaries?
Well, first, you know, just start by noticing how you feel when you're on social media. What's your mood like before and after you scroll? And if you're consistently feeling drained or anxious or inadequate, that's probably a sign that you need to adjust your habits a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good starting place. Just pay attention to what it's actually doing to you.
Right. What does it feel like in your body?
Exactly.
And you can try setting time limits for yourself. A lot of phones have built-in features now where you can actually track your usage.
Yeah, they're getting better with that.
And set those daily limits. You can also designate specific times of day.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know, when you're going to allow yourself to check social media rather than just mindlessly scrolling throughout the day.
What about what we're actually looking at? What about the content? Mm-hmm. Any tips on how to curate our feeds to make them a little bit more positive, you know, make them feel supportive?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the best things you can do is unfollow accounts that make you feel bad about yourself. You know, things that trigger those negative comparisons.
Yeah.
Or just bring you down. And then surround yourself with content that inspires you, that uplifts you, and that aligns with your values. Remember, you have the power to choose what you allow into your digital space.
I love that.
And sometimes a good old-fashioned digital detox can be really refreshing too.
Yeah.
You know, challenge yourself. Go a day or two without social media. Just see how that affects your mood, your well-being, and your energy levels. I think you'll be surprised.
All right, listeners, we've got a couple challenges for you already. So we've got replacing one episode of that binge watching with something that is a little bit more mindful. And then try taking a break from social media for a day or two. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about it.
Now, let's move on to another coping mechanism that often gets tied to our emotions. Emotional eating.
Oh, yeah, the classic.
You know, it's like, you know, reaching for that comfort food when you're stressed or sad or overwhelmed.
Totally.
Everyone does it. What is that all about?
I think it's like food becomes a substitute for emotional support.
Mm.
And it provides this temporary sense of solace or satisfaction.
Right. So it's like you're trying to fill up with something.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a biological reason for that, too. You know, certain foods, especially things that are high in sugar or fat or salt, trigger the release of dopamine and other feel-good chemicals in our brain.
So it's not just about the taste. It's actually about the way it makes you feel.
Exactly. Exactly. And those feelings can be so powerful.
Yeah.
Especially when you're having a hard time coping with difficult emotions. But the relief is fleeting.
Yeah.
And often it's followed by guilt, shame, maybe even some physical discomfort.
That's that whole vicious cycle of emotional eating, right?
Yes.
You need to feel better, but then you end up feeling worse.
Exactly.
So how do we get out of that? You know, I love food. I'm not trying to like live in a world without chocolate.
Me neither.
Right.
I think it's not about depriving yourself or demonizing certain foods. It's about becoming a little bit more mindful about your eating habits and understanding, you know, what are those emotional triggers that are driving them?
Okay. So it starts with awareness. But what do we do with that awareness? Like, what are some things that we can actually do when we feel that urge to, like, you know, go for the comfort food?
Well, the first thing I always tell people is just pause before you eat and ask yourself, am I actually physically hungry right now? Or am I feeling something else?
Okay.
If it's something else, try to name that emotion.
So is it stress, sadness, boredom, loneliness?
Exactly. Yeah. And once you've identified the feeling, you can start to explore other ways to cope with it.
So instead of grabbing those chips, maybe journal, meditate, call a friend, go for a walk.
Exactly. And sometimes just acknowledging the emotion and allowing yourself to feel it can be enough to kind of take the power out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying, okay, I see you, sadness, you're here, but you don't control me.
That's a really cool way to think about it. It's about reclaiming your power over your emotions.
Exactly.
But what about when you are actually hungry? What are some tips for making healthier choices, you know, especially when you are stressed or emotional?
Yeah, one really helpful thing is just to keep healthy snacks on hand.
Oh.
So, you know, you're not tempted by those less nutritious options when you get hungry. You know, think about what kinds of foods make you feel good, both physically and emotionally.
So we're talking like fruits, vegetables, nuts, yogurt, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to experiment with different flavors and textures. You know, eating should be pleasurable.
Yeah.
Even when you're trying to make healthier choices.
And what about mindful eating? You know, I've heard that can help with those emotional eating patterns.
Yeah, mindful eating is really about paying attention to the sensory experience of eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the taste, the texture, the aroma of the food.
Okay.
It's about slowing down and savoring each bite. You know, noticing how the food makes you feel, not just physically, but emotionally.
So it's the opposite of like mindless snacking, right? Where you're just not even paying attention to what's going in your mouth.
Exactly. And mindful eating can really help you reconnect with your body's natural hunger and fullness cues. So you're not just eating out of habit or emotion.
You're actually tuning into what your body needs.
Exactly.
I love it. This has been so insightful.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm already starting to see my own eating habits differently. But speaking of potentially unhealthy habits, let's talk about a coping mechanism that's often glorified in our culture. Overworking. Like that constant push for productivity and achievement, you know, that drive that can sometimes leave you feeling burnt out and disconnected from what really matters.
What's the cult of busyness, right? Like we're constantly told that we need to be doing more, achieving more, striving for more.
Yeah, like hustle harder.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's important to ask ourselves, what's the cost of that?
Right, because on the surface, being busy can feel good.
Yeah.
You know, it can make you feel important or valuable or in control.
Yeah.
But underneath that, what's really going on?
Well, I think a lot of times overworking is actually a way to avoid dealing with uncomfortable emotions or unresolved issues. It's a way to kind of distract ourselves from the things that we don't want to face.
Yeah, I think a lot of people listening can relate to that. It's like we get so caught up in the doing that we lose touch with, you know, the being. We forget how to just be.
Exactly.
Wow.
And we're constantly striving.
Right.
We can neglect our needs, our need for rest, connection, play, creativity.
Yeah.
And we get so focused on that external validation that we lose touch with what's true for us, what feels good for us.
So how do we escape that cult of busyness?
Yeah.
How do we take back our time and our energy and start, you know, really making those things about our priority?
Well, I think it starts with challenging some of those underlying beliefs that are driving that overworking.
Okay.
You know, the belief that our worth is tied to our productivity or our achievements or how busy we are.
Yeah, because our worth is inherent. Like, we don't have to earn it.
Exactly.
We are enough just as we are.
Exactly.
Right.
And once we start to dismantle those beliefs, then we can start to create a more balanced life.
Yeah.
A more fulfilling life. And that's a life where we prioritize rest and relationships and the activities that bring us meaning and joy.
So it's about shifting our focus from like external validation to more of what's going on inside.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's not about becoming lazy or unproductive.
Right.
It's about working smarter, not harder.
Right.
Setting healthy boundaries, prioritizing your well-being, and making choices that are aligned with your values and goals.
All right. All you overachievers out there, take note.
Yeah.
It's okay to slow down, to delegate, to say no, and to put yourself first. Now let's talk about another coping mechanism that can be both really tempting and potentially problematic. Retail therapy. That urge to buy something new, shiny, exciting, especially when you're not feeling great.
Oh, I love a little retail therapy.
Yeah.
It's that instant gratification, right?
It feels good.
That little dopamine rush.
Yes.
When you make a purchase, especially if it's something you've been wanting, it's like a quick fix for our emotional woes.
Yeah, and who doesn't love a little treat yourself moment?
Exactly.
But when does it become something that's not so healthy?
Right.
What are some signs that maybe we're relying on shopping a little too much?
Yeah, I think one of the signs is if you consistently find yourself shopping when you're feeling stressed or anxious or down, it's like you're trying to buy your way out of those uncomfortable emotions.
So it's like you're trying to fill an emotional void with stuff, but it doesn't really work, does it?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that fleeting sense of satisfaction is quickly replaced by guilt, regret,
yeah,
maybe even some financial stress, and it just becomes this vicious cycle that can be hard to break.
Okay, so how do we resist those add to cart buttons?
Yeah.
You know, how do we find some healthier ways to deal with those feelings without breaking the bank?
Well, one strategy is just to become aware of what your spending triggers are. You know, what are those situations, those emotions,
yeah,
that tend to send you on a shopping spree?
Like boredom, loneliness, stress,
totally,
or just seeing a really good sale.
A really good sale. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
And once you kind of pinpoint those triggers,
yeah,
you could start to come up with alternative coping strategies.
So instead of heading to the mall, maybe you call a friend, go for a walk, read a book, do something creative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And sometimes, honestly, just delaying the purchase can be enough to break that impulse.
Yeah. Just give it a little time.
Yeah. Because a lot of times that urge to buy will kind of subside if we just let it sit for a little while. And another helpful strategy is to focus more on experiences than material possessions. You know, research shows that we tend to get more lasting happiness from experiences.
That makes sense. I mean, memories last longer than that new shirt.
Exactly. So, you know, instead of buying that new gadget or outfit, consider investing in an experience. You know, a concert, a weekend getaway, a cooking class, even a picnic in the park.
I love that.
And it doesn't have to be expensive. There's so many free and low-cost ways to create those meaningful experiences. And another really powerful thing that you can do is practice gratitude.
Gratitude, that's a good one.
It's so powerful. And, you know, just taking a few minutes each day to reflect on all the good things in your life, that can really shift your perspective.
Yeah, because you're focusing on what you have.
Exactly.
Instead of what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can help reduce that feeling of wanting more, needing more, constantly wanting to buy things.
I love it. Okay, I am definitely going to be trying to incorporate more gratitude into my everyday life. Now, let's move on to a coping mechanism that has both healthy and potentially unhealthy aspects. Exercise. So, we all know that moving our bodies is good for us, physically and mentally, but can you have too much of a good thing?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
So, while exercise can be an incredible stress reliever, mood booster, and overall health enhancer, it can become a problem when it's taken to extremes.
So how do you know if you've crossed that line? Like, when does it go from something that's good for you to maybe something that's not so good for you? What are the signs?
Well, one sign is if you find yourself exercising, even when you're injured or exhausted, it's like you're pushing your body past its limits and you're ignoring your natural signals to rest, to recover.
Right. So you're not listening to your body. You're kind of treating it like a machine.
Exactly. Yeah. And another sign is if you become obsessed with burning calories or achieving a certain physique, you know, it's like exercise becomes less about feeling good and more about punishing yourself or chasing after an unrealistic ideal.
Okay, so it's more about the motivation behind it than the exercise itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Are you exercising from a place of self-care and enjoyment? Or is it coming from a place of anxiety or a need for control or maybe even self-punishment?
It's a good question. And what about the emotional side of things? Can exercise sometimes be a way to avoid difficult emotions?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So when we exercise our bodies, release those endorphins, those feel-good chemicals.
Oh, yeah.
That can give us a temporary sense of euphoria, a sense of well-being. And for some people, that rush can become a way to numb out or escape from those uncomfortable feelings.
Okay, so we're using exercise as a way to kind of check out from our emotional world.
Exactly. And while there's nothing inherently wrong with getting those feel-good endorphins, it's important to be mindful of our motivations and to make sure that we're not just using exercise as a way to avoid those deeper issues.
So it all comes back to balance and intention. And maybe sometimes we need to, you know, balance those intense workouts with something a little gentler, something that nurtures our bodies and minds.
I agree. Yeah, things like yoga, stretching, walking.
Yeah.
Those can be really beneficial to help reduce stress, improve flexibility, and just promote a sense of calm and well-being.
Okay, listeners, time for another challenge. Pay attention to those signals your body's giving you.
Yes.
And honor your need for rest and recovery.
Yes.
If you're someone who tends to push yourself really hard, try bringing in some of those gentler forms of movement. Your body will thank you for it. All right, let's shift gears a bit and talk about a coping mechanism that often gets kind of a bad rap. Isolation. You know, that urge to withdraw from the world and just retreat into your own space when you're feeling overwhelmed or stressed or just plain exhausted.
Yeah, I think it's that natural instinct to protect ourselves, to create a safe haven from the demands of the outside world. And sometimes a little bit of solitude is exactly what we need to recharge and reconnect with ourselves.
Right. So there's a difference between like healthy solitude and unhealthy isolation.
Yes, there is.
So what's the difference?
I think healthy solitude is about consciously choosing to spend time alone and engaging in activities that nourish you and help you recharge. You know, it's about honoring your need for space and introspection.
Okay.
But unhealthy isolation is more about withdrawing from the world out of fear or anxiety or feeling overwhelmed.
So it's more like you're shutting down, you're disconnecting, you're avoiding.
Exactly. You're creating a bubble to try and protect yourself from all the perceived dangers out there.
So it's like we're using it to cope instead of to recharge.
Yeah, exactly. And while a little bit of solitude can be really beneficial, too much isolation can have some negative consequences for our mental, emotional, even physical health.
Yeah, because we are social creatures, right? Like we need connection. We need to belong. We need to feel seen and heard.
Absolutely. And those needs don't just disappear when we're stressed or overwhelmed.
Right.
They actually become even more important during those times.
Okay, so how do we balance those two things? Like, how do we know when we're getting enough solitude versus, you know, when it's starting to tip into that unhealthy isolation zone?
Yeah, I think it starts with just paying attention to how you're feeling when you're alone.
Mm.
You know, are you feeling peaceful? Are you feeling rejuvenated, connected to yourself?
Okay.
Or are you feeling lonely, anxious, disconnected from the world?
That's such a good question to ask yourself.
Yeah, it's important.
And what happens if you realize you've been isolating a little too much? What can you do to reconnect and kind of rebuild those social bonds?
Yeah, I think it's important to start small. You know, you don't have to jump into a big social gathering if that feels overwhelming. Maybe just reach out to one friend or family member, you know.
Yeah, just one person.
Yeah, schedule a quick phone call, a coffee date, or just get out of the house and interact with the world in some small way. Go for a walk, visit a museum, or even just sit at a coffee shop and watch the people around you.
I love that. Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Right. And remember, listeners, you're not alone in this. We all go through those periods of isolation and withdrawal.
Absolutely.
It's just part of being human.
Yeah.
The key is to notice it.
Yes.
And to reach out for support when you need it.
Exactly. Reaching out is not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength. It takes a lot of courage to acknowledge that you need support.
It does.
And it's the first step toward creating a more connected and fulfilling life.
This has been so great. I feel like I'm seeing my own coping mechanisms with new eyes. And I'm excited to start applying some of these strategies.
Oh, it's been a great conversation.
Now, let's take a quick break and come back with even more insights into decoding your coping mechanisms. Don't go anywhere.
All right, sounds good.
Welcome back. I don't know about you, but this whole conversation about coping mechanisms has me thinking differently. Like, we're finally acknowledging those habits we all have, you know, the good, the bad, and the maybe not so good, and trying to figure out what they're saying about us.
It's like we're uncovering these hidden patterns in our minds, especially when we're stressed. And we've seen how those patterns often link back to our childhoods.
That's so fascinating, right? It's like the way we deal with stress now as adults might actually be connected to how we learn to deal with things as kids.
Exactly. Our early experiences really shape how our brains respond to stress. So, for example, if you grew up in a home where you didn't feel comfortable expressing your emotions, you might learn to bottle them up or maybe seek comfort in external things instead of looking inward.
That makes total sense. So someone who grew up constantly being criticized, they might overwork or try to please everyone as a way to get approval.
Exactly. Or if someone had a chaotic childhood, they might become a control freak as an adult, trying to manage everything to avoid feeling overwhelmed.
Wow. It's like those early experiences create a blueprint for how we react to stress throughout our lives. But what if that blueprint isn't working for us anymore? What if those coping mechanisms we developed as kids are holding us back as adults?
That's where the work of self-awareness comes in. By understanding those patterns and where they come from, we can start making conscious choices about how we want to respond to stress now.
So it's not about blaming our past. It's about using that knowledge to empower ourselves to make different choices.
Absolutely. We can upgrade our coping skills just like we upgrade our phones, trade in those outdated strategies for something that works better.
I love that, upgrading our coping toolkit. So if we're ready to start looking at our coping mechanisms with fresh eyes, where do we begin? How do we identify those patterns and start making changes?
It starts with paying attention. Really observe yourself, especially when you're feeling stressed or challenged. What are those automatic responses, those habits you reach for without even thinking?
So notice those moments when we're triggered, right? When we're feeling that surge of stress or discomfort.
Exactly. And then ask yourself, is this really helping me? Or is it causing more harm than good?
Am I avoiding something uncomfortable?
Yes. And how do I feel afterward?
Those are such powerful questions. Like, we're holding a mirror up to those automatic responses.
Exactly. And you might be surprised by what you discover. You might realize that something you thought was helping you relax is actually keeping you stuck. Or maybe a habit you've been judging yourself for is actually a sign you need to take better care of yourself.
So approach those coping mechanisms with curiosity, not judgment.
Absolutely. Those habits developed for a reason. They served a purpose. Oh. But we can evolve, and our coping mechanisms can evolve too.
I love that. Giving ourselves permission to let go of old strategies and find new ways of being that truly serve us. But change can be hard, right?
It can be. Be patient with yourself and celebrate those small wins along the way. Don't try to change everything overnight. Focus on gradual, sustainable changes.
So pick one or two areas to work on instead of trying to fix everything at once.
Exactly. Change is a process, not a quick fix. There will be setbacks, and that's okay. It's all part of learning and growing.
This is such valuable advice. So for those of us who are ready to start building healthier coping strategies, what are some practical steps we can take?
Well, like I said, start small. Don't overwhelm yourself. If you tend to binge watch TV to escape, try replacing one episode with a walk outside or a phone call with a friend.
Small, manageable steps that we can build on over time.
Exactly. Another powerful strategy is learning to name your emotions. We often turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms because we're trying to avoid feeling certain things.
Trying to numb ourselves to what's really going on inside.
Right. But by taking a moment to acknowledge those feelings, anxiety, sadness, anger, whatever it is, you can actually lessen their power and make room for healthier responses.
So instead of reaching for those chips or scrolling endlessly, we pause and say, okay, I'm feeling stressed. What can I do to take care of myself in this moment?
Exactly. And remember, there's no shame in feeling your feelings. It's part of being human.
This is so empowering, giving ourselves permission to feel our emotions.
It is. And as you become more aware of your emotional world, you can start to experiment with different coping mechanisms that meet those same needs, but in a healthier way.
So for example, if shopping is your go-to, maybe try a creative outlet like painting or writing.
Great example. Or if you isolate yourself when you're down, maybe challenge yourself to reach out to a friend or join a group activity.
These are great actionable tips, and it's all about progress, not perfection.
Absolutely. Be kind to yourself. You don't have to do this alone. There are so many resources available, therapists, support groups, online communities.
And on that note, let's talk about when it might be time to seek professional help. When does a coping mechanism become something that needs more than just self-help?
Great question. While lots of coping mechanisms can be managed with self-awareness and lifestyle changes, there are times when professional support is crucial.
So what are some warning signs that might point to needing therapy?
If you're using drugs or alcohol to cope, it's essential to reach out for help. Substance abuse is serious and can get out of control quickly.
Absolutely. Addiction is a serious issue, and there's no shame in seeking help. It's actually a sign of strength.
Exactly. Another red flag is if your coping mechanisms are messing with your daily life, your relationships, your work, your finances, your health.
So if you're overworking to the point of neglecting your family or burning out, or if online shopping is leading to financial trouble, it might be time for professional guidance.
Exactly. And if you're using food or shopping to numb yourself so much that it's harming your health or relationships, reaching out for support is crucial.
These are such important reminders. It's easy to get caught up in our own patterns and not see the impact they're having.
That's true. Sometimes we need a fresh perspective to help us see things more clearly and find better ways to cope.
And remember, asking for help isn't a sign of weakness. It's a sign of courage and self-awareness.
Absolutely. It takes strength to admit you need support. It's a step towards a happier, healthier life.
Speaking of a happier, healthier life, let's talk about a coping mechanism that can actually be super beneficial when used intentionally. Daydreaming, you know, that ability to escape into our imaginations, envision possibilities, and create new worlds in our minds.
Daydreaming can be a fantastic tool for creativity, problem solving, even emotional processing. It lets us explore different perspectives, work through difficult emotions, and picture a future we want.
It's like creating our own mental movies with characters and storylines and everything.
Exactly. And those mental movies can be really therapeutic. They can help us relieve stress, calm anxiety, and boost our mood.
But daydreaming can also have a downside, right? It can become a way to avoid reality instead of engaging with it.
True. When it becomes excessive, it can start interfering with our ability to function in the real world.
So how do we find the balance? How do we use our imaginations without letting them run our lives?
It comes down to intention. Are you using daydreaming for growth and exploration, or are you using it to escape the present moment?
That's a key difference. If we're using daydreaming to escape, how do we bring ourselves back to reality?
Mindfulness practices can help a lot. Things like meditation, yoga, even just taking deep breaths can ground us in the present and reconnect us to our bodies and our senses.
And what about when our daydreams are full of worry and anxiety? What about those mental movies that are more like horror films than happy ones?
Journaling can be a great way to process those anxious thoughts. Writing them down can help us get them out of our heads and gain perspective.
So put those worries on paper where you can look at them more objectively.
Exactly. Often, just writing those anxieties down can actually help lessen their intensity.
It's like giving those worries a place to go instead of letting them bounce around in your head.
Yes. And once those worries are out in the open, you can approach them with more curiosity and compassion. Ask yourself, what are these anxieties trying to tell me? What do I need to do to address them?
This is fantastic advice. I'm definitely going to start journaling more. Now, let's shift gears to another coping mechanism that can be both super engaging and potentially problematic. Gaming. Whether it's console games, online games, or mobile games, it's a whole world of adventure, challenge, and escape.
Gaming offers this unique combination of stimulation, engagement, and connection. It can help develop problem-solving skills, improve hand-eye coordination, and even create a sense of community.
Let's be real, it can be a lot of fun. But when does it go from a healthy hobby to something that's not so healthy?
One sign is, if you're gaming to the point of excluding other activities you used to enjoy, like it becomes your main source of pleasure and you start neglecting other parts of your life.
Right, like you're more interested in those virtual worlds than the real one.
Exactly. Another sign is, if you're using gaming to avoid dealing with difficult emotions or situations, you're using those virtual worlds to numb yourself and escape reality.
So it's less about relaxation and more about escapism.
Exactly. And while a little escapism can be okay, too much can lead to isolation, withdrawal, and even problems with work, school, or relationships.
So how do we strike that balance? How do we enjoy gaming without letting it take over our lives?
Healthy boundaries are key. Just like with anything else, set limits on your gaming time and make sure you're balancing it with other things that are important to you.
So schedule specific times for gaming just like you would for any other appointment.
Exactly. And pay attention to your motivation. Are you playing because you truly enjoy it, or are you trying to escape from something else?
If we're using it to avoid something, what are some healthier alternatives?
Think about what gaming provides. Challenge, achievement, connection. You can find those same things in other activities, like hobbies, learning new skills, joining a club or group.
Those are great ideas. Sometimes just talking to someone about what you're going through can be a huge help.
Absolutely. Whether it's a friend, a therapist, or a support group, talking about your struggles can help you process emotions, gain perspective, and find healthier ways to cope.
This conversation has been so insightful. I'm learning so much about coping mechanisms and how complex they can be.
You too. It's fascinating to explore how we navigate stress and the hidden wisdom our coping mechanisms can reveal.
And on that note, let's talk about a coping mechanism that often gets a bad rap. Journaling. Writing can seem so old school, but it can be a powerful tool for understanding ourselves.
You know, journaling isn't just about keeping a diary. It's about expressing your thoughts and feelings, processing experiences, and even sparking creativity. It's like having a conversation with yourself on paper.
Yeah, and you can be totally honest in your journal. You don't have to worry about judgment or filters.
Exactly. It's a safe space to explore your inner world without fear. It can help you uncover patterns in your thinking, understand your emotions better, and even find solutions to problems.
So it's like having your own personal therapist right there in your notebook.
In a way, yes. It's a way to reflect on your experiences, process difficult emotions, and gain insights that might not be accessible through just thinking about them.
I know some people struggle with getting started with journaling. Any tips for them?
Start small. Just write whatever comes to mind, even if it's just a few sentences. Don't worry about grammar or structure. It's more about the process than the product.
So just let it flow.
Exactly. You can also try using prompts. There are tons of journaling prompts online that can help you focus your thoughts and explore different themes.
That's a great idea. It takes away the pressure of figuring out what to write about.
Right. And experiment with different styles. Maybe try free writing, where you just write continuously without stopping, or bullet journaling, where you can organize your thoughts and ideas in a more visual way.
So find what works for you.
Exactly. And remember, consistency is key. The more you journal, the more benefits you'll experience. It's like building a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets.
I love that analogy. All right, listeners, it's challenge time again. I challenge you to give journaling a try. Even if you've tried it before and it didn't stick, approach it with fresh eyes and an open mind. You might be surprised by what you discover.
Absolutely. Journaling can be a life-changing practice. It's a gift you give yourself, a way to deepen your self-awareness and create a more meaningful connection with your inner world.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground in this episode. We've explored everything from binge-watching to journaling, from overworking to isolation. What are some final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the most important thing is to remember that you have the power to choose. You're not a prisoner to your coping mechanisms. You can change, you can grow, and you can create a life that feels more aligned with your values and your goals.
It's about recognizing that you're not alone in this journey. We all struggle with stress and difficult emotions, and we all have our own unique ways of coping.
Absolutely. And it's okay to ask for help when you need it. Seeking support is a sign of strength, not weakness.
This has been such an empowering conversation. I feel like I've gained a whole new understanding of coping mechanisms and their role in our lives.
Me too. It's been a pleasure exploring this topic with you.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with this final question. What's one small change you can make today to cultivate a healthier coping habit? Maybe it's replacing that extra hour of screen time with a walk in nature, or swapping those online shopping sprees for a creative outlet. Remember, even small changes can have a ripple effect on your life.
And as you continue to explore and grow, remember this: you are not alone. Embrace your strengths, acknowledge your vulnerabilities, and keep moving forward one step at a time.
That's such a beautiful message to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into decoding your coping mechanisms. Until next time, keep exploring, keep growing, and keep taking care of yourselves.
Wow, this whole conversation about coping mechanisms has really been eye-opening, hasn't it? It's like we're finally getting real about those habits that we all have, the good, the bad, some of those kind of weird ones, and figuring out what they're trying to tell us. Yeah, it's like we're shining a light on those things we do automatically, especially when we're stressed. And we've seen how those habits often connect back to our childhoods.
But the cool part is, once we see those patterns, we can actually choose to do things differently. We can build healthier habits that help us thrive, not just survive.
Exactly. It's like upgrading our coping toolbox as we grow. What worked for us as kids might not be what we need now. Just like we update our phones and computers, we can update our coping skills to better fit our lives today.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some key takeaways you want our listeners to remember? What's the heart of what we've talked about?
The most important thing to remember is that coping mechanisms are totally normal. Everyone has them. They help us manage stress, handle our emotions, and keep from feeling overwhelmed.
That's good to hear. It's not about judging ourselves for having these habits. It's about understanding them and using them wisely, and maybe even upgrading them when they're not serving us anymore.
Exactly. And as we learn more about ourselves, we can figure out which coping mechanisms are helpful and which ones might be holding us back. Remember those apps on your phone you never use. Maybe it's time to delete some of those old coping mechanisms and make room for new ones that really work.
It's like becoming a detective of our own behavior. We notice those patterns and ask ourselves, is this really helping me? Is there a better way? And if the answer is no, we can choose a different path.
Exactly. Change is a process. It takes time. Be patient with yourself and celebrate every little win along the way. Every step towards healthier coping is a step toward a more fulfilling and resilient life.
That's a great reminder. It's about progress, not perfection. And if we stumble, we just pick ourselves up and try again. This whole journey is about learning about ourselves and growing. It's about being kind to ourselves, embracing those imperfections, and creating a life that feels true to who we are.
Beautifully said. Don't forget, you're not alone on this path. We all deal with stress and tough emotions, and everyone has their own way of coping.
Absolutely. And there's no shame in asking for help when you need it. It takes strength to ask for support.
Absolutely. It can make a world of difference on this journey of self-discovery.
This has been such an incredible exploration. I feel like I have a whole new understanding of coping mechanisms and how they shape our lives.
Me too. It's been great exploring this with you.
To all our listeners, I hope this conversation has inspired you to look at your own coping habits with a fresh perspective and start building a toolkit of strategies that truly support your well-being.
As you keep learning and growing, remember, you are not alone. Embrace your strengths, own your vulnerabilities, and keep moving forward one step at a time.
That's a beautiful message to end on. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive into decoding your coping mechanisms. Until next time, keep exploring, keep growing, and keep taking care of yourselves.